One of the most serious questions that, as it seems to me, every reasonable person has to face is, where should I go? Meaning, well, I will ask you the following. A ship is sinking, and suddenly we see there's a man who knows it perfectly well, starts making the order in his cabin. Furthermore, he starts decorating it, hanging paintings there, and equipping it in every single way possible. And we can't understand what's going on. The ship is sinking. What are you doing? So what kind of a person is he? What do you think? So it's interesting. We could conduct a poll asking this. The answers would be, most probably he is just crazy, or maybe he doesn't believe that the ship is sinking, but it's already obvious that it's going down underwater, but he's sweeping here, washing, painting, and he's trying to make a palace out of his cabin. So it's not about the fact that he's a modern person, because we don't speak here of the past, of the future, but we are talking about psychology right now. So I heard a joke recently, I'm sorry if it's inappropriate, that a ship is sinking and a captain's assistant tells the captain, you know, all the foreigners jumped overboard and they are getting saved, and the Russians are sitting, eating, drinking and sitting in a restaurant. So we should save the Russians, but what should we do? The assistant comes back in 5 minutes and says, it's okay, all the Russians jumped overboard. Wow, how did you get them to do so? I know the Russians, they always break the law. So I told them, do not jump overboard. All the Russians must stay on the ship. In 5 minutes, they all jumped overboard. So you see, it's a metaphor that the ship is sinking and he is decorating his cabin. But in reality, what are we talking about? Don't we know that just one single cell appeared, life appeared, it starts developing and it is developing, and what next? Who doesn't know that they will die? Please show me such a person. Maybe he doesn't believe it because all the others die, and how can I die? It's impossible. And just imagine, here's one of the most interesting moments that we come across when we take a look at ourselves. I don't want to talk about other people. Let's take a look at ourselves. Do I know that my ship is sinking? Yes, I do. And what are you doing? As it seems, we should solve the problem in our human life. In essence, there are just two solutions of this problem. Either I am just one of the living beings on this planet who are living here, and I will die in the same way as everyone else will. I don't have a soul. My personality will not exist anymore, and you should believe that the eternal death awaits, and stay calm. So eternal death awaits all your wishes, dreams, tasks, and so on. So forget about all of this. Catch the moment, as the Romans said. Carpe diem. So as long as I'm well and happy, I can catch the moment. But when there are some problems or diseases or something happens. So which moment should I catch? So a person should believe that eternal death awaits them. So you see, you're an animal and you originate from an ape. But if you don't like apes, you can originate from a pig. So it depends on what you like best. So what is the sense of life for me? My ship is sinking. What should I do? Well, let's decorate our cabins. But let alone decorating, but I see that my neighbor is weaker than I am. So I can kill him and I can get his cabin. So this is one option, that's the other one. So the other option is the one which all the humanity has believed in from times immemorial, and according to the polls, three quarters of the population of Earth recognize the higher intelligence, the higher power, and so on. But the main point is that this faith claims that the personality, so me, I am indestructible, the death doesn't destruct my personality. So it is the change of the form of existence. And if we turn to Christianity, this form changes. If you ever read the New Testament or the Gospel, you know that one of the central and main streams of thought is that a person is not just an indestructible personality, but when a person changes their form of existence at this current moment, I mean, when a person dies, this death is not the end, it is a transitional phase after which there will be regeneration, epikatastasis panton in Greek, so there will be resurrection in flesh and body which will not be susceptible to death or disease. When Apostle Paul in the first century AD was in Athens, where the philosophers gathered from different countries, because it was the center of wisdom of the time, and they discussed the main problems of existence, and they invited Apostle Paul just in order to listen what this chatterer had to say. They loved nothing as much as they loved to listen to something new. And suddenly, some interesting chatterer, Jewish chatterer, has something to say, so they decided to listen to him. Apostle Paul was a very educated man. But meaning what? He was educated from the point of view of the Jewish knowledge, because he knew the Old Testament, but I don't know how well educated he was in terms of the Greek or Roman school, because there was an academy and a lot of philosophers. You remember Heraclitus and those philosophers who were next to him, and Socrates, who became the symbol of the Greek wisdom, Plato, who left us his dialects, Aristotle, who laid the foundation of the Western knowledge, meaning philosophy and logic and so on. So they invited Apostle Paul, and he started to speak, and something was even written down. Can you imagine? They didn't even have voice recorders back then in the first century. I can hardly imagine how they could leave. So everything was well, they listened to him, and suddenly he started to talk about the fact that all the mankind and every single person as something spiritual and personal and reasonable are indestructible, that death is not the end of personality. And then Apostle Paul inflicted himself a mortal blow by saying that there would be the general resurrection, and they said that he went crazy and told him to go away. They didn't want to listen to him anymore because he was saying some foolish things. So are they foolish? Because he said the truth, because if there is no resurrection, then there is no sense to a human life. If everything comes to an end, then what is the meaning of life? Because what we have in our life are just some momentarily experience. For instance, someone is hungry and they are so happy to eat. And then they ate, and they don't want any other food. Whatever you offer him, it won't make them happy anymore. So we live with this momentarily enjoyment. By the way, what is time according to philosophers, Plato, Socrates, pupil, answered that time is the moving image of eternity. And how does it move? You can't stop it, and every next moment is different from the previous one. Even Heraclitus said that you cannot enter the same river twice, because the water flows on and it's a different river every other moment. So there is time and there is eternity, and we live with these moments which come to an end. And if that's it, if I don't resurrect as a personality in the fullness of my existence, then there is no sense in anything. And you know, even the nature shows us interesting things. Did you ever see a caterpillar? Many girls are afraid of it. They can't stand it. And suddenly you see what happens to it. It bungles. What is it? That's it. It's like a casket for it. There's no caterpillar anymore. And what happens next? Of course, even the ancient people didn't know what was going on in there. And the spring comes, and it bursts. This bungle bursts, and we are waiting for this caterpillar to come out. But instead of it, a wonderful butterfly flies out. Oh my God! If you tell someone who never saw it, they won't believe you. They will tell you, what are you telling me with your Apostle Paul? How can a terrible, disgusting caterpillar turn into a beautiful butterfly? You are mocking me. This year we are celebrating 150 years from the day when one of the most outstanding spiritual writers died. He is the writer of the Russian Church and the Russian people, a very educated man of his time, and even Pushkin liked him a lot, and other people. He knew Krylov. He was one of the most educated people of his time, Saint Ignatius Brancheninov. He came from an ancient aristocratic family, and now from time to time his writings are edited. And he wrote a very interesting work. It's interesting for people who are not acquainted with some things. One of his works is called Garden During Winter, and he describes what a garden looks like during winter. So it's boring. Everything is frozen, there are no leaves, and he says, if only a person who never saw what would happen in spring, and I would tell them that this dead garden would come back to life, would become green, would blossom and flourish, I would be told that I'm crazy. I'm just setting you these examples because we shouldn't think that the world we live in and we ourselves are something, you know, something inexplicable. Even the nature itself demonstrates us and illustrates us the truth that the eternal religious truth. I wrote a book that is called God, and there I speak of the religious state before Christianity and where all the religions come from, and about Christianity, and the idea of resurrection is demonstrated in a new way in Christianity, and this idea is not a fantasy, it is a deep philosophic idea, and it has a great power which it gives to the human conscience in this earthly life. It means so much when a person is going on ahead and they hope that they will come to their native home, and you can compare them with a person who has nothing to hope for. You know that in history that moral decline of an army caused defeat of this army, not because the army was weak, but because of the moral decline, because nothing made sense for them. There was despair, so it has such a great meaning that I will exist forever, that I have eternity ahead of me, that my personality is indestructible. And I want to quote Pirogov, our famous surgeon, if at least a spark of immortality encouraged people, then the earthly life of the mankind would become full of the deeds that the upcoming generations would worship with reverence. Of course, if we are immortal, then yes, I do know what I should do, what I should do it for, and how I should do it. And indeed, the upcoming generations would worship it with reverence, but if I will disappear and I will no longer exist, then why does anything matter? And if we take into account the modern conclusions of science, our academician may say, our pride of our science says that the humanity as a biological species is mortal, and this death will happen not just somewhere in the distant future, but perhaps in the middle. And now I'm afraid to go on. Yes, in the middle of the 21st century. And what's next? Isn't it clear that without the recognition of God's existence, without the recognition of the idea of immortality and of the existence of a soul, it doesn't make any sense to keep on living, because a ship is sinking, and what's next? Nothing will come next. Everything is dying and everything will die. And you see, we came out into the forest and there are just two paths, and not 33, but just two paths. So it's either or. And one of these paths is Christianity. It claims these ideas, these thoughts, this sense of life that we've just discussed. So what do we come across? You know, it can't be worse than the state of indifference. You know, a person has two minds. So there is no doubt, a person is a spiritual and a bodily creature. When I say bodily, I mean the animal nature of a person, and when I say spiritual, I mean something that an animal doesn't have. So every person has two minds. One mind is cunning, inventive, adaptive, reasonable indeed. We see it around us. You know, you can take a puppy or a kitten and go to the forest with them and let them free, and you know, they will adapt, they will start searching everything. Of course, and a person has such a great mind, of course, a great adaptive mind. We can call it the horizontal mind, which is adaptive to the environment, and not just natural environment, but also to the social environment, as well as economical, and so on and so forth. And all of this is the animal mind. Why? Because all of it is aimed just at this existence, which can stop at any moment. How? I just talked to him yesterday. Really? He is just that many years old, and his ship turned over. But we can concentrate and give our full attention to this horizontal level of life, and we will see the miracles of adaptiveness. But a person has also the vertical mind that has to think about the sense of life, and which understands perfectly well that if there is no vertical sense, then all the horizontal sense doesn't make really any sense, because you can make billions of dollars, but you have just one stomach, and it doesn't matter because in any case we will all die and we will just go back underground in caskets. You know, so every person has these two minds, and these two minds often contradict, but we should make them harmonize. We should find the harmony, because in Gospel Jesus Christ tells us to first go looking for the kingdom of heaven and for its truth, and all of these earthly things will be given to us. It doesn't mean that we shouldn't work, because Apostle Paul says the opposite. No. No, if you don't work, you don't eat, as Apostle Paul says. So, there are two minds, and every person indeed has an inner fight between these two minds. So, what is primary in my life and what is secondary in my life? Should I in the long last decide for myself the question of the greatest importance? What am I living for? Or should I better not think about it because it distracts me? So, should I just go down to this horizontal animal level and that's it? Should it all come down to this only? And what's happening? And especially now, but you know, throughout the whole history as well, what is happening to our culture, to our creativity? Please pay attention. Culture today is considered to be something great, educative, something high-flown. But today our culture gets more and more free of conscience, of shame. Culture gets rid of morals, and we see it everywhere. So it's the tendency to convince a person, to zombify a person, that they're no more than just cattle. You just need money, pride, and pleasures. Forget about afterlife. Maybe there is some power, but not God, not a personality. Maybe there is some power, some magic power, but not God. You know, by the way, if we turn to the Indian philosophy, those who studied know about it. The bottom line of it, if we try to put it in a few words and to compare it with the European philosophy, it is monism against monotheism. Monism. So there's some unified origin, but monotheism is about God. This is a completely different thing. It's a completely different self-conscious of a person. A person feels differently in this world, and a person has a different attitude towards everything and everyone and nature and all in this world. As they always said throughout all the centuries, but I believe that nowadays we believe in an especially difficult period of time. Why? Because due to this unbelievable scientific and technological progress, we are now under the pressure of what we gave birth to. I mean, us, the people, we gave birth to this scientific and technological progress. And what does it lead to? So we can hear now about this from everywhere and from all the philosophers. The scientists agree with them that today we are going to slavery to what? To our creation, to this monster, to this beast, which is the scientific and technological progress. Yes, of course, let's just take a look at this computerization and automatization of everything, including our conscience, because computers will soon substitute for people, as the computers can do many operations at the same time, so many times faster than a human being. So a person should step aside, because there's a robot who is the master and you're my servant. So we are going to such an end that has never been ever expected. It has always been presumed that the scientific and technological progress would serve us, and it does serve us, but we can also see that it inflicts many things on us, because we can't do without it, and that's why this progress starts to drive our conscience, our mind, and it makes us do many things. It changes us, and if we turn to this powerful idea that is being inflicted on the society, this is the idea of freedom. And I don't know what can be done about it. What is meant by freedom? How can we regard a person who will come up and spit into the face of another person? They should be judged, of course. It's hooliganism, of course. It is not allowed. Isn't it allowed? Just remember of the example of Shirley. Of course, there were such terrible images of Muhammad. But can this be done? Because for the millions of people, it is something holy, it is a prophet. And when something like this is done publicly, well, of course, there was a terrorist attack next. And then France says, we are for the freedom, we will go on doing such things. But what kind of freedom is it? Why should we be free to spit into someone? Is it freedom? It's the perverted understanding of freedom which is being widely propagated. They want to annul all the restrictions. There will be no restrictions in terms of humanity, so there will be no more idea of the beauty, of goodness, of art. You know, earlier we were so surprised when we heard of something of this, but now we can find it everywhere, there and here, in our country. We see what happened to our ballet, to our opera, to our theater. So what's happening? What is it? We should think about it, because nothing ever appears on its own accord. So it was all created by someone. So there is a driving power of all of this, but we can see it. Centuries ago, Goethe in Faust said that people consider everything that is higher than their everyday needs to be just vain vapor. So then a person and the world are locked into this, at this horizontal level. And this is the worldview which says you live once, take everything from your life. But what is everything? The hospitals are overcrowded, the humanity faces degeneration, there are more and more physical and mental problems, and for as long as it seems you that you are healthy, everything's fine. But how do you know that you now come out onto the street and a car doesn't hit you? So these are just some bubbles which have to loosen our concentration. So a real human being, a personality, is the one who solves for this themselves the problem of God, if there is God or not, because the time of our life is negligible and we do not know how much time everyone has. Blaise Pascal, who we all know, left us his so-called Pari of Pascal. You know, it's a non-believer who claims that there is nothing, no God, no soul, no eternity. So what do you win? Asks Pascal. What do you win? So do you recognize morals? Well, a non-believer will never say they don't recognize morals. Everyone recognizes morals. So what do you win in this life? Nothing. You live and that's it. So you don't have two stomachs. No. But if there is God, you must realize what will happen to you in afterlife. If there is eternity, you will lose everything. That's the logic of Pascal. So here you don't win anything and there you lose everything. And then vice versa. What does a believer lose? So he loses nothing. He can eat and drink and live according to their conscience, but if there is God, then you win everything. This is the famous Pari or bet of Pascal. So he was this sort of a man. His aim was to write a book that atheism would never even dare to speak, but unfortunately he died and he didn't have time to finish his book. But there are thoughts by Pascal. These are famous sketches of this book that he was planning, and there are many great thoughts there. He was a believer and he couldn't ever understand what does it mean that science is against religion. Well, what can we do with Pascal? So, the criteria when we have to evaluate all the events, all the facts of our life, all these criteria depend on our worldview. That's why it's vital to decide what the true worldview is, without which a reasonable person can't live. because I don't know, where do I go? It's like a dark night and I don't know where to go. I must have a worldview. What kind of a worldview? A well-grounded worldview, not just because I want so or I don't want so. And I can tell you that the Christian worldview has the real grounds. So there are proofs and grounds and arguments, and the atheistic worldview, which negates God's existence, has absolutely no grounds. So I went to the forest, and I saw a fox, and you saw, and he saw, and she saw, and we say, there's a fox. But he says, there is no fox there, it is impossible. We say, but we saw it, but it is impossible. So what is the proof? So we have independent witnesses here. Is this a worthwhile argument? Yes, of course. Why do you claim there is no fox? Well, I went to the forest and I didn't see any fox. Oh, well, of course. Well, let's conduct a survey. There were 10, 20 people, like hunters, who went through the forest and saw no fox. So, is there no fox or did it hide? It hid. Such a smart animal it is. And you can keep looking for me. So I'm just setting you this example on the elementary level. And here with God, there is no God. Why? Who saw him? Well, did you see a flea? Well, you didn't see it. Oh, well, it doesn't exist. Of course that God was seen, but not with our bodily eyes. Do we see beauty with our eyes? You know, one person looks at something and says, it's beautiful, and another says, well, it's nothing special. Well, when we think of joy or love or beauty, who can tell if there is love or beauty or joy? We should experience it, and only when someone experiences it, they will know for sure that they exist. And what's unique about Christianity is that it says that God is love. So it doesn't say that God has love. No. We shouldn't confuse it. It says that God is love, meaning that God equals love. So this is the spiritual origin. It is the absolute law of our existence. And it turns out it is love. That's what the Christianity believes in. That's what it claims. And that's what it provides many arguments for. Okay, I'm sorry to have spoken for so long. I always warn, and you should keep it in mind, that you shouldn't give the freedom of speech to the professors, because you will never be able to stop them.